Wel, bore da i chi gyd. Bore da, Mr Davies. Very happy to respond in Welsh. Well, good morning, and it's great to be with you guys. As I said, it does really feel like coming home. Lots of new faces, but lots of really familiar faces. It's great to be with you. And looking out at you guys this morning, you do look like a, you know, you look a clever lot, I reckon. So we're going to start this morning with a quiz. Everybody enjoys a little quiz, don't they? Don't they? Yeah, thank you. Right, okay. So we've got a slightly weird quiz this morning. Okay, if this is going to come up. Hang on, we've got to wait a second. Okay, well, we're going to look at that story. Know your phobias, okay? What on earth is that about? What's a phobia? A fear, okay? Right. So I've got some phobia names here, and if you think you know what this is a fear of, I want you to shout out, okay? We'll start with the really easy one. Okay, arachnophobia, what's that a fear of? Spiders, okay? Anybody suffer from arachnophobia here? No? A few, we've got a few arachnophobes in our midst. Okay. Musophobia. Do you know what musophobia is? Or musophobia? I have no idea how you pronounce it. It's the fear of mice. Anybody, if they saw a mouse skirting across their kitchen, that would, okay, cause them problems? Yeah, okay, a few here. Okay. Trypanophobia. Anybody know what trypanophobia? I come across this in my other day job. For those... Okay, this is the fear of needles. Okay, I'm a part-time GP as well. And you get some people, they're absolutely petrified. It's a fate worse than death if you come anywhere near them with a needle. Okay. Gerascophobia. No, no. Or gerascophobia is the other way. Pardon? Thank you, Mr. Davis. It's the fear of growing old with that. And there are some completely ridiculous ones as well, like timbrophobia. Do you know what timbrophobia? It's the fear of stamps. Anybody have the fear of stamps here? No, no, nobody here has the fear of stamps. Well... Yeah, we can laugh at some of them, but for some guys, maybe some people here, some of those are kind of real phobias. But, and this, when you try and explore, you know, where has this phobia started, there's often a root, isn't it? Something that started as a child. And there's only about two things I remember being afraid of when I was a child. And at the time, they seemed really real fears at the time, but they now kind of seem completely ridiculous now. One of them was Daleks. I still remember hiding behind the sofa, petrified of Daleks. It was that, exterminate. It was that. And you think, how can you be afraid of that? But I was. Anybody else was afraid of Daleks? Was it just me? Oh, no, there was a few other people. They were afraid of Daleks. And I'm going to show my age now. The people are most... people aren't going to be able to relate to this. There was something else. There was another series on the TV that I watched that just petrified me. Did anybody see The Day of the Triffids? And I was petrified. These kind of daffodils kind of went around making people blind kind of thing. Do you remember they kind of... And how can you be afraid of that, you know? But these kind of things, these plants that used to wander around. But I used to have nightmares about triffids. Kind of these things coming after me. I'm glad to say I've managed to get over those fears now. But this week, we're continuing. I gathered that you looked last week, you're starting a new series looking at the life of David. And this morning, I've got the tough job because we're probably looking at probably one of the most famous, if not the most famous story in the Bible, certainly the most famous story in the Old Testament. We're looking at the story of David and Goliath. And it's a very familiar story, but I've really, been glad for the opportunity of coming to this story afresh, because it's so familiar. And as I came to it again, said, Lord, you know, what do you have to say, you know, to me and to us this morning? And it's kind of really struck me. It's a story of fear and faith. There's a real paralyzing fear, but there's also real victorious faith. And the question, the challenge that comes from the story, which one do we decide to listen to? Do we listen to that voice of fear, or do we listen to that voice of faith? So let's have a look at the story. It's in 1 Samuel 17. Malcolm's going to come and read it. It's on page 275 in the Church Bibles. And just as Malcolm reads it, it is a familiar story. But you'll see, we're looking at the first part of the story, up to verse 36. And as you'll see, there's a contrasting response to the threat. The author sets out what the threat is to God's people. And then we see these two contrasting responses. Firstly, from King Saul, and then the shepherd boy, David, who you heard last week had already been anointed to be king. So 1 Samuel 17, verse 1 to 36.
Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Soko in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes Damim between Soko and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the village of Elah and drew up their battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the valley between them. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are not you the servants of Saul? Choose a man and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will be our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time he was very old. Jesse's 3 eldest sons had followed Saul to the war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 eldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines." Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines, facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from family line from taxes in Israel." David asked those standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? They repeated to him what they'd been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's eldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are little more than a boy, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of the Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you."
Thank you, Malcolm. Okay, so let's imagine the scene as it's set out for us there. So we've got the Israelite army and the Philistine army, and they're at war. Both armies are encamped on two sides of the valley, of the Elah Valley, and they've reached deadlock. They're entrenched in their lines, and neither army is willing to proceed and kind of risk major losses. So as often happened during that period and in that part of the world, one of the armies would send out one of their champions. And that's what they did. They sent out the champion Goliath. And here we meet the threat, the source of the fear. And he was a formidable threat. The author goes out of his way to point that out. He was a tall chap, over 9 foot tall. He describes this huge, sophisticated armor that he was carrying and these impressive, lethal weapons that he was carrying. Yes, Goliath was impressive. He was intimidating. He had this kind of this air of confidence, this cockiness. And to the Israelite army, and to Saul as their leader, looking out at him, he kind of gave this air of invincibility to them. So yes, there was a real threat to the people of God. But the crucial part of this story is not who Goliath was and what, how tall he was or what he was carrying. What we see in this first part of the story, we see the contrasts between the two responses we get to this threat. And how our two main characters in this story, how Saul and then later David respond to this. So firstly, Saul. Saul was the king of God's people. The people had asked for a king and God had relented in giving them Saul. So how was he going to lead his people against this threat? How was he going to step up to the mark? Well, we see, don't we, in verse 11, we see the response of Saul. On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. It's not a great promising start, is it? On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. And as the story progresses, it doesn't get much better. If you look down to verse 24, it says there, Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. So what was the initial response? What was Saul's response to the threat, to the fear that they faced? Dismay, terrified, and fled in fear. Not what you would have hoped from a king or from a leader. But before we give Saul a hard time, I think, in one sense, you know, we can empathize with Saul, can't we? It was a very real threat. Imagine yourself, picture yourself as Saul. And you see this man standing in the valley in front of you. 9 foot tall, clad with all this armor, with this impressive weaponry. And when you see this, you start to feel very small. And even though Saul was the king, he started to feel very small indeed. And our fears, can't they? The obstacles in our lives that stop us from living as God wants us to live, that stop us from achieving what God wants for us, they can be very, very real. They can seem very intimidating. They can seem sometimes overwhelming. And for Saul, what was his response? In the face of fear, well, initially, he did nothing. That was his initial response, to do nothing. He was paralyzed by this fear. And later on, we see that the army even started to flee from this fear. And that's why fear is a weapon that the enemy will use so often against us, because that's what it does. It paralyzes us, doesn't it? It stops us from doing and going and achieving what God has for us. It freezes us in our tracks, in our track. And it just is something that can sometimes at times just seem overwhelming. And as we see there in verse 24, it not only paralyzes us, but at times it turns us to want to flee away from it. And sometimes when we're overwhelmed with these obstacles or these difficulties in our lives, then we flee, don't we? We run away, we turn to other things in the hope that by turning to these other things that the fear would go away. We can hide, can't we, with anything. Sometimes even good things, you know, like our jobs, our families, our relationships, money, sex, drugs, alcohol. It can be anything that we sometimes use to try and hide, to flee from the fears that we're facing. But unfortunately, it doesn't make the fear go away, does it, either? The fear is still there. Look at verse 16. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. I'm sure at the end of a day where Goliath had been doing this, maybe for a couple of weeks, maybe Saul went to bed and think, oh, maybe he'll give up. Maybe, oh, tomorrow he'll get bored of it and he won't bother turning up. But, He wakes up in the morning, Saul, and thinks, maybe today it'll be different. But then after waking up a few minutes later, he hears that voice booming again. And I'm sure Saul felt sick in the pit of his stomach again, faced with this fear. How on earth am I going to deal with this? How on earth can I move forward? What am I going to do? And having this overwhelming fear, this fear to run away. And I know it's the same with us, isn't it? We sometimes try and escape. We sometimes just wish. We sometimes bury our head in the sand thinking, maybe it will go away. But like Goliath, every morning, every evening, it keeps coming back. It keeps facing us. It keeps challenging us. But if you look, why did Saul react like this? Well, if you look at those two verses again, look at verse 11. On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. And verse 24, which says, whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. And as I read it, it just kind of struck me. What produced the fear in Saul? It's when he heard the words, when he saw the man. The fear struck him when Saul focused on the fear. Is when he looked out, saw the man standing in front of him. And as he did that, this fear overwhelmed him. Well, what are you trying to say, Owen? Was he meant to ignore the fact that this threat was in front of him? No. But Saul should have known that his focus, yes, when he heard the voice, was not to look at Goliath and be paralyzed with fear. But what Saul should have done was lift his eyes. Lift his eyes and know where his help could come from. He should have lifted his focus to God, because he was the only one who could rescue him from this situation. And I know in my own life, when I'm faced with these difficulties, when I'm faced with these fears, it keeps on coming back to your mind, doesn't it? I remember a difficult time during my work as a GP where it was a difficult time. Somebody, a young girl, had died very suddenly, and I was the last doctor to see her on the Friday afternoon. And by the Saturday morning, this 16-year-old girl was dead in her bed. And I remember getting the phone call on the Monday morning from my practice manager saying, explaining the situation, that the police wanted a statement and we need to see how we would proceed. And the fear overwhelms you, doesn't it? You get this sick feeling in the pit of your stomach. And over the next days and weeks, every time I had a quiet moment, my thought would go to that situation. How was I going to deal with that? And the only way I could deal with that was to lift my eyes to God and to plead for him for the strength and the help to get through. On the Monday morning, I was about to go out and do a school assembly in front of a room full of kids, a school teaching them, and the theme I was looking was God's goodness. And I had to cling on to those promises during that time. It wasn't ignoring the fear, but it was knowing that we have a bigger God who can deal with it. And it's that response that we see modeled to us in David's response. As you learned last week, God had chosen David to be king. He was the youngest of a family of eight. He'd even been forgotten by his dad when the sons had been lined up. But God had chosen David and had anointed him to be king. And even at the end of chapter 16, he'd been chosen to play harp for the king, to soothe King Saul from his worries and anxieties. So things were looking pretty good for David. And you'd think after being anointed as king and being chosen to play harp for the king, maybe David was off in some finishing school somewhere, learning the finities, the finer points of how to be king. Well, no, we see from here, from this story, David was on the hillside caring for sheep. David, what are you doing there? You've been anointed to be king. David trusted himself to God's hands. He knew that his life was in God's hands. He trusted God's timing with his life. And he, even though he was the future king, he was in the remote mountainside caring for his father's sheep. A bit like Prince Charles baying up on the hills around Bala in the rain, looking after some sheep. You can't really imagine it happening, can you? But that's where David was. And then, David gets a call from his dad, and he says, Dad, from his dad says, right, I've got a job for you to do. I want you to take some food to your older brothers. So again, not a particularly glamorous job, taking your older brother's packed lunch off to them. But that's where we see David at the beginning of this story. And it's when this happened, when he takes the packed lunch for his brothers, that David is confronted with the threat of Goliath for himself. And how does David respond? Well, if you look down to verse 22, and we see verse 22 to 24. David left his things with the keeper of the supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brother how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they fled from him in great fear. And then down to verse 26. David asked the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? So David comes, and like Saul, he hears the threat. He sees the threat that is facing God's people. But his response is just so different. And as I've looked at this response this week and learned from it, I see it's the key. If we want to be free from those things, those fears, those obstacles that restrict us in our walk with God, which tie us down, which paralyze us. So firstly, David's response. Well, firstly, we see that David is more concerned with God's reputation than his own. David is more concerned with God's reputation than his own. Look at the end of verse 26. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Goliath, by his taunts, wasn't just putting down Saul. He wasn't just putting down the Israelite army, but by doing that, he was putting down the name of God. The name we've been singing about, declaring that is the name that is above all other names. But Goliath, by standing there and issuing his threats, was degrading and mocking the name of God. And David would not have any of it. He's happy to be caring for the sheep in the middle of nowhere, doing nothing for himself. He's not concerned for his own name. But when the name of God is being put down like this, something has to change. And I know when we're faced with our fears and these difficult situations that we come across all the time, it's so easy to get focused in on ourselves. It's so easy to think, woe is me. Isn't life hard on me? And in one sense, it's a natural response. And in one sense, yeah, I know I've been there. When things are hard, you know, things are difficult at home, when there's situations that you're facing, wherever, it's easy to think it's hard on me. But that just kind of leads to a sense of self-pity and a wallowing in this situation where we're at. David was more concerned that this situation was defying the name of the living God. And he didn't want that. With all his heart, he didn't want that to happen. And when I start thinking like that, when I realize in these difficult situations, say, Lord, I hate this situation with all my might. But Lord, in this situation, I want you to be glorified. I hold on to God's promises. If you don't know it yet, Romans 8:28, it needs to be imprinted on our memories, doesn't it? For we know that in all things, God works together for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purposes. For we know that in all things, God is working for good, for our good. And when you're in this situation, everything inside you is screaming that you want to escape from it, you want to flee, that you're paralyzed by. We have to hold on to that promise. Lord, I know that you're going to work for good in this situation. Doesn't mean the situation's going to go all rosy. It doesn't mean that some fairy godmother's going to come and wave a wand and make it go all the way. Often that good that God works is the transformation of our lives. It's the changing our lives in that situation. And I remember as that scenario I told you, I remember that Monday evening after I'd heard about the situation at work. I remember having that sick feeling. I remember going to the bath and having that sick feeling in the pit of my stomach overwhelming me again. And I knew this verse came to mind. And I had to repeat it to myself over and over and over again till God's truth started to saturate my life and free me from that fear. So David was not concerned about his own reputation. He was concerned with God's reputation. And secondly, his different response we see in the fact that he was not put off by opposition because he knew that God was faithful. How many of you here have older brothers or sisters? Anybody here? Okay, quite a few of you. How many of you are the youngest in the family? Yeah, a few of us are the youngest in the family. I think we should kind of form a society, shouldn't we? Kind of stick together because we've known what it is to be picked on by our older brothers and sisters. And we see, after David's response, this classical older brother response as David turns up. You older brothers and sisters feel guilty as you read this. When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom do you have? Who have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." He wasn't mincing his words, was he? I think even my brothers weren't quite that bad most of the time. Not exactly a ringing endorsement, and methinks a bit of jealousy thrown in there as well. But it's not just from his older brother that David faces opposition. Look at verse 32. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on the account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." You are not able to go. It's a big put down from Saul, the king. And how was David going to respond? He could say, "Oh yeah, maybe they are right. Maybe I should just blend into the background. Maybe I should just give in to the fears like the rest of the army was doing." Or was he going to respond differently? And we have that same choice, don't we? Because we have that nagging voice, don't we? Or is it just me? Or do we all have that nagging voice that says, "You'll never get free of this. You'll never be different. You'll never be able to go and do that." This nagging voice that the evil one will nag in the back of our minds all the time. And he'll use whoever, whether it's big brothers or kings, he'll use anybody or any situation to put us down. And the important question is, how do we respond? How we do respond to that voice that says, "You're good, not good enough to achieve what God has put you on your heart to achieve. That you're not good enough to conquer the situation you're battling with." Well, look at verse 34 and 37. We see David's response. "But David said to Saul, 'Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or bear comes and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord, who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." David didn't care what people thought. Well, maybe he cared. He probably did care. But he managed to put that behind him. And instead, he focused on God. It's not rocket science, is it, really? If I travel 220 miles just to say that, in the middle of our situations, we need to focus on God. That's what David did. He remembered God's faithfulness to him. And that's what we have to do. We have to remember those times in our past where, yeah, we've been through difficult times, and God brought us through. He was faithful. David said, "I've been there when I've wrestled the lion and the bear. God was faithful then, and he is going to be faithful now. I know it." There was no doubt in his heart. And it's as simple as that. We have to just lift our eyes and focus on him. We have to hold on to the character of God, who we know him to be. Because the problem is, that voice again is whispering in the back of our minds, "God's not going to see you through this." Often because the problem we're facing is because of it's our own making. It's we've messed up. We've brought this problem on ourselves. And how can you expect God to get you out of this? You've made this problem yourself. But it's during that time we have to cling on to God's promises. Again, in Romans 8, verse 31, Paul says, "If God is for us, who can be against us?" It's not difficult. It's basic. But we have to hold on to it. Are we holding on to it? If God is for us, if God, the creator of heaven and earth, is for us, who can be against us? But when that voice says God is not for you, and Paul knew that, he goes on, doesn't he, in verse 32. "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things?" When we doubt God's love, when we doubt his character, when we doubt, is he really going to be there for me? Is God really, really, really going to stay with me in this situation? Is he going to step up to the mark for me? Is he? Paul says, we just have to remember, he who did not spare his only son. He's done that. Is he going to ditch us now? If he loves us that much, we listen to that lie that he is going to abandon us during that time? He who did not spare his only son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Is there anything he's going to hold back from us? He's given us everything. And if we doubt, we just need to look to the cross. "You've done that for me, and I know you will not abandon me in this situation." So, how are we going to face our Goliaths? How are we going to stop these fears paralyzing us and stopping us from living in the freedom that God has for us, and stopping these giants from stopping us from achieving what God has for us? Jane has already read from Jeremiah 29, verse 11. Do you believe that verse? That he has good plans for us. He had good things, plans to prosper us and not harm us. He has things for us to do. And the evil one will try anything to stop us from being free from these fears, stop us from achieving what God has for us. Well, we need to just lift our eyes, be more concerned about his reputation, focus on him, remember his past faithfulness, remember who he is, remember his love, remember his character, look to the cross. Isaiah told us this: the punishment that brought us peace was on him. The punishment that brought us peace. The peace that sets us free from that fear. The peace that transcends all understanding. He's paid for it. It is ours. It is available to us. He doesn't want us living in that fear. Just wants us to know he has won the battle. You'll hear next week how David went and fought the battle. But we're coming now to a time of communion where we see that God in Jesus has won the battle for us. And I just came across these verses in Deuteronomy, which I'm going to read to finish for you. It was instructions for the Israelite people as they faced war. This is what Moses told them. And Saul, as a good Jewish boy, would know these words off by heart. And David knew these words off by heart. But it was only David who listened to them. Deuteronomy 20. When you go to war against your enemies and see horses and chariots and an army greater than yours, do not be afraid of them, because the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, will be with you. When you're about to go into battle, the priest shall come forward and address the army. He shall say, "Hear, Israel, today you are going into battle against your enemies. Do not be faint-hearted or afraid. Do not panic or be terrified by them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies, to give you victory." Amen.